Okay. Yeah, just a little, just a short thought. You know, this parsha, of course, is the parsha of Matan Torah, and I was just going to show you one pasuk. The pasuk begins Perek Yud Tes. Perek Yud Tes. The pasuk says. B'chodesh Hashlishi, the third month, Lotseis Bnei Yisrael Mi'eretz Mitzrayim, when they left Eretz Mitzrayim, right? How do we count the third month? Because Nisan is always month number one, so Reish Chodesh Sivan, B'yayim Hazeh, on that very day they came to Midbar Sinai, they came to the Sinai Desert. Now, quick question, just again looking at Bamidbar, they came to Midbar Sinai, Reish Chodesh Sivan, of the first year of the Exodus. Okay, how long did they stay at Midbar Sinai? Although they'll get the Torah in a week. All right, they'll get the Torah the 5th, 6th of Sivan, etc. Or at least they'll get the Aseret HaDibros. But when was the next time that they actually traveled? How long did they stay at Midbar Sinai? So we actually know this. They stayed there for almost an entire year because they didn't leave until Parshas Baloscha, which is, right, that's the same pasuk that we learned about Yisrael. The Anan, right, they built the Mishkan, right? They built the Mishkan at Har Sinai, etc. And they left, the pasuk says, that's when they asked Yisrael to stay. The pasuk says, Shana Hashenis, the second year, remember the years change in Nisan, Chodesh Hasheni Iyar Esrim Bachodesh, the 20th of the month. So just remember, in terms of picturing things, that they stayed at Midbar Sinai from Rosh Chodesh Sivan of year 1 to the 20th of Iyar year 2. And then they started moving. The Meraglim were sent the 29th of Sivan, year 2. And the Meraglim came back 40 days later, which turns out to be the 8th of Av. I mean, the Meraglim came back the 8th of Av. They gave their negative report, and the Jewish people cried the night of the 9th of Av. Okay, so you got the idea. So what happened in that Shana Rishona? A lot of things happened. In that Shana Rishona, we got the Torah. In that Shana Rishona, we built the Mishkan. In the Shana Shni, and the Shana Rishona, and I was going to say we brought the Korban Pesach, but that's not quite true. Nisan is already the beginning of the second year. We brought Korban Pesach, and that's the only time we brought it in the desert. Right? In the Torah, the Korban Pesach was only brought twice. It was brought in Mitzrayim, and it was brought 1 year later in the Midbar. The Pesach was not brought the other 39 years in the desert. Why was it not brought? Because Alibi DMS, the Korban Pesach is a mitzvah that's totally in Eretz Yisrael, but the Pesach in the Midbar was one exception. In other words, it was a unique exception. Okay? All right. So, after the Pesach tells you, on that day they came to Midbar Sinai, it then says, Vayisu Mirfidim, they left Rephidim, the oasis of Rephidim. Vayavo Midbar Sinai, they came to Midbar Sinai. Vayachanu Bamidbar, they encamped in the desert. And then it says again, Vayichan Sham Yisrael Negador, they encamped adjacent to the mountain, at the foot of the mountain. The Aruch Chaim HaKadosh asks, what is the second pasuk telling me Bichlal? I already know from the end of Bishalach that the Jewish people were in an oasis called Rephidim. Indeed, what happened at Rephidim? That is where Amalek attacked us. And I know that the next stop is they came to Sinai. Pasuk Aleph already tells me they came to Midbar Sinai. So why does it then go backwards? After it tells me they came to Midbar Sinai, it goes backwards and tells me, and they left Rephidim and they came to Midbar Sinai. I know that already. And then it says they came to the desert and they came to the desert and they encamped in the desert and they encamped Neged Ahor. The pasuk seems to be telling me things I already know, And it also repeats, even within the pasuk, it repeats the verb vayichan twice, camping. And it repeats the word midbar twice, midbar Sinai and midbar. So what is the whole tachlis of the pasuk, and what are the repetitions of the pasuk? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, right, Rav Chaim ben Attar, came from Morocco to Yerushalayim, buried on the Har HaZeisim around 200 years ago. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, we call him, gives a beautiful explanation, and he says that if Pasuk Aleph is telling me geographically that they came to Midbar Sinai, Pasuk Beis is talking about the spiritual preparations you have to go through in order to be zeichet to Kabbalah Satira. It is not referring to physical traveling. That we already know from B'Shalach and this and the Pasuk Aleph. It's referring to the spiritual journey. And he divides it into four steps. There are four steps a person must take in order to be worthy of accepting Hashem's Torah. Step number one is leaving Rafidim. That's step number one. What is Rafidim? So, although Rafidim is a place, Chazal also tell us Rafidim could be understood as an acronym or an abbreviation or a contraction. Rafu Yadayim Min HaTorah. Rafu Yadayim is a phrase that means your hands are weak. Now, what is the phrase? It's an idiom, really. The Chazal use the word Rifyon Yadayim whenever a person is complacent, not enthusiastic, bored, uninterested. The reason is the following, in terms of the idiom. When you care about something very deeply, you tend to physically hold on to it very tight. If you're taking your baby across a busy street, you know, you're going to hold the baby tight. God forbid the baby shouldn't slip off or whatever it is. If it's something you don't care about that much, you know, your grip is loose, you're not thinking about it, you might drop it, etc. So, Rafu Yadayim in HaTorah, Chazal say, why did Amalek attack us in Rafidim?
Because we're loose with them.
Right. Not simply because Rafidim is a place, but Amalek attacked us because we were weak in our passion and excitement and enthusiasm for Torah. In other words, Amalek has a kayach over Klal Yisrael when there is a rifyein, a weakness in one's enthusiasm for Torah. And the Or HaChaim makes the point that even if a person learns Torah, even if a person does mitzvahs, but if you do it with a sense that it's a burden and it's a bother and it's a tircha, and you don't have enthusiasm and passion and geschmack for it, that is called rifyein yadayim. And that enables Amalek to attack you, because that's an inner Amalek. Because what's interesting is that we sometimes think of Amalek as a demonic type of active evil. Like, think of Amalek like the vicious axe murderer. But there are many Chazals that portray Amalek in a very different light. Amalek is not the crazy axe murderer. Amalek is the cool, calm, collected cynic who communicates the message that nothing's important, nothing really matters. Kind of a lack of passion, a lack of sense that things are, you know, everything's a matter of opinion. You have your opinion, I have my opinion, you know, moral relativism, ethical subjectivity. Right? Amalek is the cynic. In other words, cynicism is actually considered to be a characteristic of Amalek, even greater than active evil. See, active evil, as evil as it is, can involve a passionate commitment to something. In fact, it's been brought down in different Sifri Musar, Sifri Machshava, that a passionately evil person is more amenable to tshuva than a person who simply doesn't feel anything's important. Because when you're passionately connected to something, meaning to say, when you have an idea that something's right, you follow it, and you follow it, and you follow it. So if you could be convinced that a certain idea is right, all of your commitments will switch in that idea, in that direction. But if you're a person that kind of says nothing really matters, you're kind of dead. So, you know, there's no way to reach you under that level. Right? So it's easier. That's what they sometimes say about the old Israeli secularist. It was easy to become a Baal Tshuva because they had this like passion towards secularism, because they thought it was the only way, it's the new Jew, etc. So you show them a different way, and they become passionate about that. He says, with Americans, the problem always was that Americans tended not to get excited about anything. You know, I'm okay, you're okay, you know, everything is equally good. So an American was so parv in everything that, you know, you couldn't really get them. I should get them, I'm including myself too. You couldn't get them necessarily excited about things. So with Americans, that's what Rav Weinberg used to say, that's how he used to say also, that you can make an Israeli Baal Tshuva in like in a day. Because once they're convinced that something is right, they act upon it. So as an American can be intellectually convinced of all sorts of things, but you know, still this kind of this inertia, this heaviness, this stoneness, stone-like characteristic, which made people very, very reluctant to change themselves. So the Aruch Chaim HaKadosh says that the first step towards Kabbalah Satira is to generate within our panemias, our personalities, passion, enthusiasm, excitement. Leave the world of Rafidim. Vayisu mi Rafidim. Leave the attitude of Rafu Yedeya min HaTorah. That's step one. Now, we then have two phrases, both of which use the word desert. They came to Midbar Sinai. They came and they encamped in the desert. So here the Aruch Chaim says, Midbar has double duty, meaning Midbar symbolizes two things. And again, these are going to be two more qualities that you need. Number one, a Midbar is a place, many people consider the desert very, very beautiful, in spite of its difficulties, precisely because the Midbar is so empty of materialism. In the Midbar, you don't have buildings, you don't have stores, you don't have things, you just have an emptiness. So the Midbar represents a simplicity of life in which there is not an abundance of gashmias and materialism. Right? And that's the second quality, to be Mekabel Hashem's Torah. Now, granted, Judaism is not ascetic. We do say, for example, the Nazir is a sinner. The Nazir is a sinner because he is depriving himself of legitimate pleasures that the Torah gives him, namely wine, and it's not good to be an ascetic. Right? The Talmud Yerushalmi even says, Hashem is going to call us to a din v'cheshbon on every pleasure that we could have enjoyed in this world that's permitted that we didn't enjoy, of course in moderation, obviously, because Hashem put these things in the world and you deprive yourself of them, it's as if you're saying to Hashem, your Bria doesn't count. Now, the Mesillas Yesharim is a whole discussion, because don't we say, on the other hand, Kadesh Atzmech B'Mutrlach, you should sanctify yourself by refraining from that which is mutter. The Yerushalmi seems to say, and even the Bavli seems to say, that it's forbidden to forbid yourself on that which is mutter. You're supposed to enjoy it. So again, the question is everything, at least in a small way, right? It's not right to say, I'm not going to drink wine at all. So you drink wine for Kiddush or L'chavot Shabbos, right? Now, so you're Makadish yourself by not getting too involved, but you partake of the pleasures of the world in order to express gratitude to Hashem. So the Aruch Chaim makes the point, which again, all the Sforim say, that even though we're not ascetic and you're supposed to enjoy the world, but the more you're involved in it, the more your mind and your energies are focused on money, on possessions, on materialism, the less your mind will be focused on Torah and Avodah and service of Hashem. So the first Midbar says, seek a life of simplicity in which you don't have to be so involved in money and the like. You know, take what you need, try to make what you need, but don't be overly involved in stuff and possessions. That's the first Midbar. Now, there's a second aspect of Midbar, and that is the very emptiness of the Midbar suggests a modesty, a lack of showing off, a lack of ostentation, and that is the idea of modesty, anava. So our three qualities so far is leaving Rafidim, that means engendering within yourself passion, excitement, gishmak. Number two, simplifying your life by not creating a life that is so dependent on materialism and stuff. Number three, have the humility. Because again, without humility, you're not going to learn from other people because you'll think that you're better than them. And when you're filled with your own ego, you're not open to hear what Hashem is trying to tell you in the Torah. So you need humility. Yeah.
Can Midbar also mean symbolize appreciation? if you're in the desert and there's nothing there, a small like cup of water or like a oasis, would you'd appreciate things much more if you're in the barrenness.
I hear what you're saying. The Arachaim doesn't say that, but again, I think what you're saying is a good idea, that when you live in an environment where things are lacking, you appreciate much more, certainly. Now, the final one is Rashi tells us as well. Now, the final phrase is Vayichan. It repeats the word Vayachanu to Vayichan, but it changes it from plural to singular. And that already, Rashi says, that in order to be Makabel the Torah, there has to be unity and love of Israel, and that's it, Vayichan, that we all become like one person, Ish Echad Uvalev Echad. So the Or HaChaim gives us a very nice mission statement. Easier said than done, of course. Create enthusiasm. Simplify your material life. Be a humble, unassuming person. And love and connect yourself to other Jews. And that is the meaning of Pasuk Beis. You know, we say during the Pesach Seder, we have the Haggadah. Right, and we have the Dayenus. If Hashem would have done only this, that would have been enough. Now, some of the Dayenus are hard to figure out. If Hashem would have split the Red Sea, but wouldn't have taken us in dry land, Dayenu. Well, you know, gee, if the sea would have drowned us as we walked in, it's hard to see the Dayenu. So each Dayenu, you have to ask yourself, you know, what would the benefit have been? But one of the Dayenus is, if Hashem would have brought us to Har Sinai and not given us the Torah, that would have been enough to be grateful for. So people ask the obvious question, what would have been so good about being at Har Sinai if Hashem wouldn't have given us the Torah? Isn't the whole point of Har Sinai the Torah? So a lot of Mefarshim say that at Har Sinai we somehow managed to achieve the idea of we were like one person, one heart, Vayichan. So what it's saying is, that's such a wonderful, holy thing that even if the only thing we would have achieved at Har Sinai is the Ish Echad of a Lev Echad without a Torah, that would have been enough to be grateful. And how much more so, of course, we're grateful that Hashem gave us the Torah. Now, Ben says, give you a little bit of an anti-Zionist remark, although I'm not an anti-Zionist per se. It says in the Haggadah, if he would have given us the Torah and not brought us into the land of Israel, Dayenu, right? That's enough to be grateful for. So some people like to point out, it doesn't say if he would have brought us into Eretz Yisrael and not given us the Torah, Dayenu, because that wouldn't have been Dayenu. In other words, now, but the Maisa, that Diak is totally crooked, because I mean the Haggadah is following chronological sequence. Yeah. It can't say if he would have brought us into Eretz Yisrael and not given us the Torah, because it's always going in order. So it's not a raya, but some anti-Zionists like to bring a raya. Oh, you see, that it's only Torah without Eretz Yisrael. You know, we're grateful. Eretz Yisrael without Torah, nothing to be grateful for. That's the raya. But as I say, the diuk is not at all mukhrich. Okay. All right, have a good day.
Thank you so much.
Okay, take care.